talk, let's take a moment and cultivate a good motivation. And so just sit for a moment and be in touch with your wish to be happy and how much that wish is deeply rooted in your heart and how much it influences everything you do in your life. That simple wish to be happy and to be free of any kind of misery whatsoever. Think of a friend or a relative, somebody you care about, and think that's the same wish that they have that motivates their actions, the wish to have happiness and be free of misery. And really look at that person that is dear to you and think how important that wish is to them. Think of a stranger, maybe somebody at the grocery store or on the highway or somebody that you don't really know, and think the same is true about them. The motivating thing in their life is the wish to be happy and to be free of suffering. And think just as you want happiness for yourself, you want it for your dear ones, then extend that feeling towards the strangers. Just because they exist, they're like you, wanting happiness and not misery, then just as we wish joy for ourselves and our dear ones, wish it for strangers as well. Then think of somebody that you don't like, maybe somebody that you're afraid of, somebody whose views you don't agree with, somebody you don't trust. And think the chief thing that motivates that person's life is also the wish to be happy and to be free of suffering. people. It's just somebody who wants to be happy and not miserable. And they think that doing what they're doing is the way to attain that, however mistaken the method they may use to find happiness may be. See if you can wish that person well. See if you can wish them to have happiness. If they were happy, they would be acting in a quite different way than they are right now. In a positive way, then let's have the intention to listen and share the Dharma together this evening. Who was the person that you picked for the one you didn't trust, the one that made you afraid? Could you see that really what's motivating that person is the same thing that's motivating all of us? Yeah? Could you? Yeah? Could you get a sense, too, of how terribly confused that person's mind is? Because when we look around, everybody is motivated by that one simple thing, wish. And yet, when we don't know what the causes of happiness are and what the causes of suffering are, then we do all sorts of misdirected actions and say all sorts of horrible things in an attempt to be happy, and we're not happy. Yeah. So just as that is our situation, it's also the situation of other people. And so to be able to look at that person and say, wow, if they had actual happiness, yeah, they would have some clarity of mind and they acting differently. And can I wish them well in that way? So when we study the Dharma, it's not just some intellectual endeavor, but we're really trying to take the teachings like this and put them into practice so it affects our mind and helps us to change our mind. And in doing so, the Dharma will really push our buttons. Yeah. Because we often have quite rigid, tough emotions about other people or opinions about other people. And, you know, the Buddhist teachings are making us re-examine those emotions and those opinions and see if they are meaningful, if they're rational, or if, you know, we're off base somehow. And if we're off base, how do we correct it? So, the meaning of, the causes of happiness and the causes of suffering, this is something very important for us to know. And that's what's discussed in the book, Good Karma. The book is based on a poem that was written in India probably about a millennia ago or maybe more. It's a beautiful poem. It's really stupendous. And the author, Dharmarakshita, goes through all these situations of if you're experiencing this, this is the kind of karma, the kind of volitional action that you did in the past that's creating the cause for you to experience the kind of result that you're experiencing right now. So we often, when things are not going well, we say, what did I do to deserve this? And chances are the answer may be in the book. But the answer is always some misguided action that we did earlier this life or in a previous life. So the causes of our misery are not other people. They're not other people. They come from our own mind. Either how we're relating to people right now, how we think about them, how we interpret their actions, or it comes because of actions we did in the past that are ripening into the present circumstances that we're facing. So, if you're having a bit of a hard time after the election, it's interesting to think, you know, I created the cause to be in this situation, to have this kind of thing happen in the country where I live. And so what do we do in response to that? Do we yell and scream and get angry and create more disturbing karma? Or do we, try and rein in our own negative actions and see how we can spread peace in this chaotic world? As hard as it may seem at this particular moment, there is a way to do it. So I wanted to tell you the story a little bit about how this book got written, because it came from a situation that I experienced that was very powerful for me and that has really informed all the other times in my life when I've had difficulties. So the story was, I went to Kopan Monastery in 1975. It's outside of Kathmandu, Nepal. The situation in Nepal was extremely poor at that time, and at the monastery especially. We Westerners who were staying there, we had the deluxe treatment, not like the little monks. It was a school for little monks. So for dinner, we got a scoop of peanut butter with our bread. That was luxury. That was our special privilege. Okay, that's all we had for dinner, was bread and peanut butter. So, that's just the state of the situation. So living there, I was there for several months, I got hepatitis A. So hep A you get when people don't wash the fruits and vegetables very well. So I was quite ill. I lived in this kind of dorm building that was built just of wooden planks. It was several stories high, maybe three stories. But the ceiling of one floor and the floor above it, you know, it was just this plank. So when somebody cleaned their floor on top, you were the recipient of the dirt that fell into your room below. So there I was with hepatitis, extremely ill. Hep really takes all your energy. So just lying there. The bathroom, oh, I should tell you about the bathroom. Okay. The bathrooms were basically holes in the ground with woven mats on the side and two planks where you put your feet. So in the middle of the night, you had to be quite careful where you put your feet. Yeah. And for me, getting to these outdoor bathrooms, I might have well been climbing Mount Rainier for the amount of energy it felt like it took me to get there. So most of the time, I just lay in the room. And at one point, somebody came and gave me a book that was called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. And it was a Dharma book. I was new to the Dharma. I'd just been studying a few months. And so I started reading the book. And I'll read you the verse that I came upon. It's verse 9 or 10, so it's towards the beginning of the book. It's verse 9. Okay, so there I am. Oh, I forgot to mention also, I was so sick that when I went down the hill into Kathmandu to the doctor, and it came time to get back up the hill, there were hardly any vehicles that went up the hill. And in any case, I didn't have enough money to pay for one. And I didn't have enough energy to climb the hill either. So one of my friends carried me up on his back. So this was the situation. So there I am lying on the floor, you know, and I read this verse. When my body falls prey to unbearable illness, it is the weapon of destructive karma returning on me for injuring the bodies of others. From now on, I will take all sickness upon myself. So, you know, I really wanted to blame the cook and all the people who worked in the kitchen who didn't wash the vegetables very well, and that's why I got sick. And instead, Dharma Rakshita is telling me, this is the wheel of destructive karma returning upon me. You know, in other words, in the past, I did actions that left a karmic trace. Karma simply means action. So you could say an energy trace, for lack of a better word, on my mind stream. And then that ripened as my illness and what I was experiencing. And what in particular did I do to cause this? For injuring the body of others. Now I thought about that. And I thought, you know, I haven't really injured the bodies of others. You know, I protested the Vietnam War. I didn't go there. And I'm kind of a nice person. And, you know, why does this happen to me? And then I started to remember when I was a little kid. And in the summertime when there were flies around, I thought it was so cool with a fly swatter to go and swat them. you know, to sneak up behind a fly and come I took great pleasure in killing those flies. And I also took great pleasure, I thought I was helping my parents because they were planting a garden and there were snails everywhere. So I collected all the snails and then stepped on them and squished them. So I thought, oh, I'm doing something very good. So, but I don't think from the perspective of the snails and the flies that my action was so good. I think that was injuring the body of others. And when I started to think of previous lives, you know, who in the world knew what I had been and done in previous lives? I certainly didn't remember. And, you know, they say we've been everything and done everything. So, wow, I may have caused a lot of injury to others' bodies. And that's the principal cause for my being sick with hepatitis. So this really changed my attitude, you know, towards my life, basically, because I realized I could no longer just blame other people when I was unhappy. Yeah. Now, blaming people for our unhappiness is kind of one of our favorite pastimes, isn't it? Yeah. Why am I so unhappy? He did this and she did that. Da, 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 da. And poor me. I'm the victim of all these horrible people's selfishness. Yeah. But that wasn't what Dharma Rakshita was saying. He was saying other people were the victims of my selfishness. Yeah. And that he was saying I had to accept responsibility for my own actions and the result of my actions and basically stop bellyaching. But you know, belly aching is so comforting, isn't it? Yeah? When you sit there and just complain and see yourself as an innocent victim and all these horrible people, what they're doing, and I have no responsibility for it. It's all their fault. There's something so juicy for our ego about this, isn't it? Yeah? To be able to sit there and just, you know, feel sorry for ourselves and blame somebody else. But on the other hand, okay, it's juicy for our ego, but it doesn't bring us much happiness, does it? Because if our misery is due to other people's actions, then that means that we're only going to be happy when other people change their actions. Now, do we have any control over other people's actions? Okay? In the little meditation we did, the person who you didn't trust or who was frightful to you, do you have any control over their actions? No. So this viewpoint of, you know, my happiness means other people have to act a certain way, it puts us in a very untenable position because, you know, everything depends on others and we can't control them. Yeah. On the other hand, if we look at our experiences through the viewpoint of karma, and as our experiences, both pleasant and unpleasant experiences, being the result of our own actions, then there's something we can do because we can change our own actions. We can't make anybody else do anything, but we can change ourselves if we try. And then, in this verse, as I'm lying there sick, the last line, yeah? From now on, I will take all sickness upon myself. What? Yeah, I don't even want the sickness I have, and he's telling me to take on other people's sickness? I don't want that. What that line is getting to is a practice that we call the taking and giving meditation, where we imagine taking on others' suffering, and not just sitting there experiencing their suffering, but taking their suffering and imagining that it destroys our own self-centered mind, our own attachment and anger, which are the cause of our own misery. So you imagine taking others' illness, in this case, and thinking that as, you know, we think in a compassionate way, as long as I'm experiencing illness, may it suffice for the illness of everybody else. And then when we imagine taking others people's illness, we imagine that it destroys our own self-centeredness and leaves a completely wide open space in our own heart. And from that wide open space, then we imagine radiating a light of our own loving kindness and thinking that we transform our body, our possessions, and our good karma into whatever other living beings want and need, and we give it to them, and then they experience happiness. So it's quite a powerful meditation, because just even thinking of taking on other people's misery is not something we usually do, yeah. But it's a way to really deepen our compassion, yeah. Thinking, you know, I have the inner strength to just even imagine taking on others' misery, and then, you know, giving my body, my possessions, and even my good karma to them, having it manifest as whatever they need. So it's quite a transformative meditation when you do it in a really serious way. One time, when I lived in France at a monastery, I had an infection in my big toe. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't pay attention to my big toes very much. Yeah, they usually don't have much feeling, and I don't give them much attention. But when you have it must have been like a boil, something like, you know, like an inside infection that was full of pus inside my big toe. And boy, did it hurt, yeah. I had never really experienced anything that painful before. The monastery was out in the French countryside. There was no way, it was nighttime, there was no way I was going to get to a doctor then. So I just had to make it through the night, and I really couldn't sleep because it was hurt so much. So the only thing that I did that whole night long was basically this meditation, you know, a few other meditations, but basically this one. And thinking, you know, as long as I'm in this pain, may it suffice for the pain of other people. And I think that's what kept me, you know, able to endure it until the morning came about and I was able to get to the doctor. So it's quite a powerful meditation. So in this book, he deals with a lot of things pointing out situations that we experience now, and then describing the kinds of actions that we did either earlier this life or in a previous life that brought them on. So I'll read you a few verses. Okay, I'll just randomly open the book.
Let's see what we come up with.
Okay, what do we have? Let's begin here. Okay, this is verse 10. When my mind falls prey to suffering, okay, so your mind is unhappy, maybe you feel confusion, despair, distress. When my mind falls prey to suffering, it is the weapon of destructive karma turning upon me, for definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others. From now on, I will take all suffering upon myself. Okay? So when our minds are unhappy, you have unhappy minds sometimes. You know, nothing really big has happened, but you're just in a foul mood and you're unhappy and grumpy and maybe even really depressed or feeling despair. Okay? So this kind of experiences don't come causelessly to us. It's not like things happen without causes. Everything happens with a cause. So here, since we're experiencing the result, we're the ones who created the cause. Yeah. So what was the cause here? It's the wheel of destructive karma turning upon me. So something I did, some destructive action I did in a previous life. Yeah. And what did I do? For definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others. Okay, have you ever caused turbulence in the hearts of others? I'm not talking about just accidents, you know, with people misunderstanding what we say. But have you ever really wanted to say something that really hurt somebody else? Be truthful. Yeah, we have, haven't we? Sometimes, you know, we are just so upset, so angry. Oh, what can I say that is just going to get that person where it's going to hurt them the most? And that will give me such pleasure. It's a nasty mind, isn't it? Totally nasty mind. But it comes sometimes. So we follow that mind, yeah? And we cause turbulence in the hearts of others. We say really mean, critical things to them. We lie and make them afraid of something that they don't need to be afraid of. We threaten them. We know what they're very sensitive about, and we push that button. And so when we act like that, we're creating the cause for our own mental unhappiness. Yeah. So the point about karma is that when we harm others, we're also harming ourselves. Yeah. Our actions don't just have an immediate effect on someone else, but they're going to have an effect on our life too. Okay, and so if we've done this kind of behavior, what do we need to do now that is different? From now on, I will take all suffering upon myself. So here again, doing the taking and giving meditation, imagining that we take especially the mental suffering of others upon ourselves. Yeah, enduring their mental suffering. And then giving them our body, our possessions, our merit, so that they can be happy. So you see that what we're doing as an act of purification to change our mind and to cut this karmic energy is the exact opposite of what we did to start it. Mm-hmm. Here's another good one. When I am separated from helpful and loving friends, okay, think of a situation where you've been separated from helpful and loving friends. Okay. This is the weapon of destructive karma turning upon me. What did we do? For luring away others' companions. From now on, I will never estrange others from their companions. So we're separated from good friends, good companions. Maybe in your marriage there's problems. Okay? It's the result of luring away others' companions. In other words, maybe other people were married, or maybe they just were friends and had a very close relationship, or they were relatives and very close and loving towards each other. But we went in to the situation, and maybe out of jealousy or who knows what kind of motivation, we interfered in their relationship and made them quarrel because we wanted to take one person and have them be our friend or our companion. Yeah. Happens a lot in this world, doesn't it? Okay? And so we break up other people's good relationships due to our own self-centeredness. And what do we experience as a result of this? Then we're separated from kind and loving friends. So when we understand, karmic cause and effect in this kind of way, then it's very helpful for us because it shows us what we need to do to change. Yeah? If we don't like the result we're experiencing in our lives, then we need to change what we're doing. Yeah? And not do the same old destructive actions again. We need to change our actions. And so how are we purifying it? From now on, I will never estrange others from their companions. Yeah? And so not only to avoid interfering in others' friendships and relationships, but also doing things to help create harmony. Yeah? To, when other people aren't getting along, to do things to help them reconcile. Instead of talking badly about other people behind their back, either in our office or our family or wherever we are, to say good things about other people behind their back and try and, help people create good relationships that are fruitful for everybody. Okay? So these verses are pretty practical, aren't they? Yeah. It's often rather shocking to us, because we're so habituated to blaming others, to all of a sudden go, I did this kind of thing to others. I put this energy out in the world. Why am I so surprised when it's coming back to me? Like a boomerang comes back. Yeah? If I treat other people in a certain way, why am I surprised when they treat me that way? I shouldn't be so surprised. The book also talks about certain selfish actions that we've done. And it's really, when you read it, it's like, he lived 10, 11 centuries ago, but he's talking about me. And it's like, ooh, did you really have to see that quality in me, that selfish kind of disgusting quality? But, so my first reaction was like, you know, can you just say a few nice things in there too? Yeah. But then I began to really see that it's only when my faults are made evident to me that then I can actually start to change them and do something about them. If I go through my life just thinking that I'm so wonderful, then there's no way I'm ever going to improve. So it's actually kind of good when my faults get pointed out. So if I just open it, let's see. Okay, there's no verse on this page. Let's see what verse we come up with here.
Oh, that one's too awful. Okay, that one's not so good either. Oh, here's one.
Okay. In this second part of the book, all of the verses have the refrain that is, dance and trample on the head of this betrayer, false conception. Mortally strike at the heart of this butcher and enemy, the self. So it's referring to really, you know, turning it's referring to seeing our own selfish mind as our enemy, to seeing our own self-grasping as our enemy. And because, you know, these minds are actually the source of all the disturbing karma that we create that brings the misery in our life. Okay, so here's one thing we do. Like I said, he's talking about me. I dislike advice and am always difficult to be with. I am easily offended and my grudges are always strong. Are you like that sometimes? I dislike advice. Yeah. Listen. If I want advice, I'll ask you. And if I don't want advice, keep your mouth shut. And if you do feel like you have to give me advice, you should make 3 prostrations first and kneel down and then praise me and then give me the advice. Okay? Otherwise, no advice. Thank you very much. Okay. So, what happens is even there are friends and people who care a great deal about us, and they see that we're doing something that is going down the slippery slope and going to bring us some problems. And so with a kind motivation, they come to us and they try and give us some advice so that we go in a good direction. And what do? We get defensive. Yeah. You can't talk to me that way. I didn't ask for this advice. People in glass houses shouldn't throw bricks, you know? And we just give it right back to them. And yet they're coming to us with a really kind motivation to help us. Meanwhile, some other person comes with the motivation to manipulate us and says so many sweet things. You are so intelligent. You are so helpful. You are such a kind, wonderful person. Your ideas are really correct. They flatter us up, down, and across. They have a rotten motivation because they want to use us. But we go right along with them, because they're saying sweet, ego-pleasing words, which we really like and we want to hear more of. But our friend who's telling us something unpleasant because they care about us, we don't want to listen to. Are we foolish? Seems so, huh? Okay, I dislike advice and I'm always difficult to be with. Why am I difficult to be with? Because I want my way. Because my way is the best way. And what I want to do is the most important thing, and you just need to realize that. That's our attitude, isn't it? Yeah. What I want is most important, and I should get my way, and you should do everything I want. So we're difficult to be with. Yeah. And we're demanding. When people don't do what we want, we let them know. We really give it to them, you know? And we demand that they do this, they do that, or they stop doing this, they stop doing that. And then we wonder why people don't want to be with us. It's so puzzling, because we're such sweet people. Yeah? If we looked at our actions a little bit more closely, we might understand why sometimes we drive other people a little crazy. Yeah? Especially in families, isn't it? Yeah? Family life is so difficult because you're with the same people all the time. You know them so well. They seem so much a part of you that it feels like, oh, I should just be able to demand anything I want from them. And so often, towards our families, we are then incredibly bossy and very rude. Yeah, very rude. We treat our family members worse than we treat strangers. And yet, they're the people we care the most about. Really dumb. Isn't it dumb? Okay, so I dislike advice and I'm always difficult to be with. I am easily offended. You make even the slightest comment that has even a tinge of something disparaging towards me, and I'm offended. Why are you speaking to me that way? How dare you speak? Don't you know who you're talking to? Yeah. And not only am I easily offended, but I don't forget that you offended me. Yeah. Inside, I have this secret list, my own internal mental computer file that never gets erased, where I note every time somebody slighted me and didn't treat me well. And I cherish that list because then the next time I have a quarrel with someone, I can pull it out and quote to them everything they did that I didn't like. From 5 years ago, from 10 years ago, from when we were children. So we hold on to grudges. And grudge holding is an excellent form of self-torture. Yeah, it is. Because when we hold grudges, we're the ones who suffer the most, not the other person. They're out doing something. We're miserable. So, you know, in the refrain when it says dance and trample on the head of, you know, this misconception, it's really talking about our self-centered mind and our self-grasping ignorance. And, you know, we've really got to get a handle on those two mental states because they're really the source of our misery. And yet we all want to be happy. We don't want to be miserable. So that's a little bit about the I do need to mention that karma works the other way too, which is that all the happiness we have in life comes from our own virtuous and constructive actions. We don't do just destructive ones. We do many kind actions. Okay? We all had something to eat today. Yeah? We aren't living somewhere in Africa starving. We all had something to eat today. That comes due to our own good karma from having shared with other people. Okay? When we share with other people, we create the cause to have the resources that we need to stay alive. Now, we all have friends and spent some time with kind people today. Now, why do we have that opportunity? Because we were kind to others, either earlier this life or in previous lives. Okay? So we usually only think, what did I do to deserve this, when it's a negative result that we're experiencing. But we should also, when we have even the smallest good thing happen to us, to say, what did I do to deserve this? And see that it was some action that we did with a motivation of kindness, a motivation of care and concern for others, of wanting to help, or the bare minimum, a motivation to restrain from harming others. Just that motivation to restrain from harmful actions is something virtuous that brings happy results. Okay, so to really see, you know, to pay attention to the happiness we have in our lives and rejoice and not take it for granted and try and create more of the virtuous causes that bring those kind of happy results. Okay, so we have I think I've spoken enough. We have a little bit of time for questions and comments. Yeah?
I had a discussion today with someone on kind of the same subject, and it has to do with is the fact that you, say, kill the flies, or whatever, you kill the flies mm-hmm. as a child, being automatically at some point going to be ripen as a negative action or against you.
Unpleasant.
Is there a way, I mean, isn't it automatic, or is there a way, because it was my understanding there's a way that we can work on our karma and the causes and conditions to make this other have a different result. Now, is this a true or not true?
Yeah, quite definitely. Quite definitely. Karma is not cast in concrete. Yeah. We may have done negative actions. Those seeds are on our mind stream. But if we do purification using the four opponent powers, so regretting the action, restoring the relationship by having kind thoughts towards whoever it was that we harmed, making a determination to avoid the action again in the future, and then some kind of remedial behavior. Yeah, if we do some purification with those four parts, then we can impede the ripening of the destructive karmas. Or even if it does ripen, it's a very mild result.
But you would, in that case, you would need to know what harm you did and do the remedial?
No, you don't need to know exactly what
harm.
I mean, things in this life, it's very good to think of specific actions we did. But we can also generate to previous lives. We don't remember previous lives. But when we study the 10 destructive actions, for example, if we just think, you know, chances are I've done them in my previous lives, so I want to purify them, yeah, then we can do that. So that's why, actually, you know, if you have a daily meditation practice, it's good to do some kind of purification every day, because we do create negativity quite easily. Yeah. Yeah, but karma is not cast in concrete, and it's not like, you know, I hit you, so in the next life you're going to hit me. You know, it's not like that. It's much more subtle, much more complex. Okay. Other questions or comments? This is your chance to ask. I say that because sometimes it's quiet during the Q&A, and then everybody lines up afterwards to ask their questions. So if you have a question, chances are somebody else may have that same question. And it's good if you ask it. Yeah?
This is a hard one. What do you do when you're engaged, when I'm engaging in a harmful action, I'll just be right out there and say, when there are creatures that invade your house, that you don't know what to do other than to destroy them. And how to work with that.
Okay.
Because I feel like I cannot, in all honesty, you know, be before the Buddha and say, I'm not going to do that, because I know that I would be lying. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how to work with that.
Okay, so when insects or animals, maybe mice invade your house, or cockroaches, or rats?
Rats.
Rats. Okay, because at Tara's Refuge, you know, the house down the hill, we have mice. So there's something called have a heart trap. And you trap them. You put peanut butter in it. The rat or the mouse goes inside and it flicks it so it closes, but it doesn't kill them. So they're alive inside the trap. And then you have to take it somewhere far away. You have to take it across water, you know, usually. Yeah, but we have one house near the Abbey with mice. And he said the other day he's taken over 300 mice out.
See, I have a mouse that's too smart.
Yeah, well, you know, this house has fields all around it, and winter's approaching, so they're looking, you know, so of course you have to go and find out how they're entering, block the holes where they're entering, yeah, and then take the ones out that are already there. But these have a heart traps, or they don't kill them, so.
I was asking, and maybe there is no answer to, like, how to work with it. So I think of the four opponent powers.
Uh-huh.
If at the present time don't feel I'm in a position to say I'm determined to not do this harmful action, is there some partial mitigation? I get it that it's bad. I get it's wrong. I mean, I'm trying to have anyone, you or anybody, say, oh, you, it's okay, Leah, it's okay. I get that, but is there any way to mitigate
How to mitigate the damage?
Well, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. at least do it with a mind of regret. And then make prayers for the living being, that it may have a good rebirth, although, you know, that kind of death isn't conducive for a good rebirth. But, you know, at least pray, you know, that maybe you will practice well, and in a future life, may you meet that being in whatever life form they are, and may you be able to lead them in the Dharma at that time. But consider the have a heart traps. Yeah. I mean, seeing a dead rat with its neck broken is pretty bleh. And seeing a live rat isn't, you know, it's easier on the eyes too. Yeah.
So in a similar vein, I'm thinking about the election, and I'm speaking for myself, well, you know, the feelings that I've been having. I mean, I am forgiving of myself in some ways because I feel like it's a process that I'm going through to come to different places of compassion and understanding and concern for other people. But on that way, you know, I'm wondering about just mitigating in the same way some of the harmful thoughts I'm having or some of the anger or some of the frustration or, you know, all those kinds of things. Because I think it's unfair to expect myself to go from here to here without going through some of those other things that aren't always very nice or pleasant.
Yeah. So, I mean, anger arises and frustration arises and rage may arise and, you know, we can't just like shove them down and say don't feel them. Yeah. But then the thing is, how do we manage those kinds of emotions so that we don't become exactly like the people that we're opposing? That's the danger, you know, is if we get enraged and become very hateful and spiteful, then our minds are just like their minds. Yeah, which doesn't do anybody any good. Yeah. So one thing I do is I just look, you know, and it takes me a while, you know, it takes me a while, because I definitely, you know, we all have prejudice against different groups, and I'm quite prejudiced against rich, snotty people. Yeah? So, you know, who think that they can boss everybody else around. I really don't like that. So, a few ways that I deal with it is to think, you know, that person's born into that situation. They grew up conditioned in a certain way. It wasn't like they chose to be born like that, and they chose that kind of conditioning. You know, their karma propelled them to that. And to also see the depth of confusion and ignorance that people have, you know, to incite hatred in others, to incite violence and prejudice in others, to say, to lie and not think the second, have a second thought about it. It's like those people must have incredible inner suffering that they think doing that is perfectly okay, and they have no sense of personal integrity or self-respect to help them restrain themselves from that kind of speech and that kind of action. And it's like, wow, you know, the depth of that ignorance and the kind of karma that they're creating. When you have a microphone and can influence millions of people in a negative way, I mean, the karma from doing that is just abominable. It's not something I would want to have on my mind stream. So when I think in that way, yeah, then there's something opens up, and it's like, you know, this person has no idea about, you know, karma, about rebirth, about anything. And they're creating tremendous causes for suffering for themselves and for others. Yeah. now, so can I generate some kind of compassion for them? You know? I also find it helpful to think of them as babies. I did this with George W. a lot. Yeah? I thought of him as a baby, you know, a baby. But, you know, because babies are cute. Yeah? They are. Yeah? So babies are cute. So they're, you know, he wasn't always like he was. You know, now he's looking pretty good. Yeah, in comparison, I mean, I really had problems with him when he was president, but now it's like he's mild-mannered, you know. Anyway, so, but I used to think, you know, well, he wasn't always like this. He was a baby at some time. Yeah, and he's not always going to be like that.
I think it's also useful to look at the collective karma that we all have, probably most of the people here, as rich, bossy people that don't listen to the people who have no work, never got a college education, can't get out of their situation, feel like everybody looks down on them, that are very, very angry in this country.
Yeah.
It's a useful thing to think about because we're all very, most of us, I assume, in this room are very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a collective karma from that.
Yeah. Well, definitely some collective karma coming from a position of privilege in society. And just ignoring a huge part of the population of the country, you know, that we share with them. And then seeing how those people can get mobilized when somebody, you know, understands their plight while we kind of ignored them.
Yeah.
Yeah? Anything else? Yeah.
Just the thing you said before made me rethink what the karma I created to be here Trump as president, and I thought, well, maybe possible I had some bodhisattva motivation to be here and help create peace in this time.
Well, maybe. You're not angry now. For those of us who got upset, I think the way to deal with it is to create a bodhisattva motivation. When you're in difficult situations to practice, and you know, bodhicitta is the way to do it, to transform the situation. Yeah. If we're angry, I don't think we necessarily have a bodhisattva motivation. Yeah. But we can definitely transform our mind into one. And that's kind of the only choice, isn't it? Yeah, is bodhicitta or bust? You know? That's it. Either we generate love and compassion and bodhicitta and transform our own mind, or we sit there with grudges and hatred and our mind being exactly like the mind of the people we're criticizing, which doesn't do anybody any good.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a particularly interesting time because I think it's our responsibility, and when I say our, I mean especially white people, to be very vigilant about watching what's going on around us and being willing to step in situations skillfully to support people mm-hmm. who are having difficulties, and then the people who are creating those difficulties, and how do we deal with those people? So it's a very interesting time.
Yeah.
For being skillful and acknowledging our privilege and how we do it.
Yeah, and it's a time for I read somewhere that a lot of people were wearing safety pins, you know, to indicate that we're all interconnected and linked together, and symbolizing, you know, I'm there if you need help. And so this, you know, is the time when we really need to step out and help people more than we have. Yeah, especially, you know, in public areas, if we see something going on that is harmful towards somebody, to be able to intervene in a skillful way. And also learning how to talk to people who have different views than we do. And I was thinking about it, you know, because we talk about diversity, and you're a diverse nation, we need to accept diversity. But then we feel like we accept diversity and other people don't. But we need to accept other people's opinions that are and ways of doing things that are very different than our own, even if we think they're wrong. You know? So instead of hating those people, to open up some kind of door for dialogue or friendship. Where we live, our whole county is like the reddest of the red. Yeah, I mean, we're out in rural America, and there's a few old hippies living there, but, you know, it's our county's very poor. There's no tertiary institute in the county. There used to be a big paper mill. It shut down. They're trying to get some other business in, but there's all sorts of state regulations that are interfering with it. And people are quite poor and they're hurting. And yet, we live in that town and we're friendly with the people. And two of us at the Abbey are on the board of Youth Emergency Services that work with the homeless teens in the area. And I love our board, you know. We don't talk politics, but everybody on that board is very compassionate and really wants to help these teenagers. Yeah, and we do business, you know, with the local stores. And, you know, we drive our truck into town so we fit in, you know. Somebody recently, our old truck got too old, we finally sold it. Somebody else donated another old truck that works better, you know. And so, you know, you create good relationships with the people in the town just by being friendly and paying your bills on time, and we don't have to talk about politics. Yeah. But, you know, they're good people. Yeah, when you know them on an individual level, they're good people. Even though they scare the bejeejis out of me when I see them walking around with rifles. But, you know, it's a hunting area and they carry rifles. And, you know, and I can't say anything, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, in that sense of minding the gap, you know, of knowing that practice is beneficial and the Bodhisattva way is the way to be, I'm listening and I'm thinking about my own feelings over this last week, and in addition to the anger and the rage, there's a real fear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I can kind of experience that in my community also. You know, you go to the Sakya, you know, Tibetan people are very concerned, you know, and I mean, it just goes on, that, and so dealing with that really, you know, I can suppress it, but then every once in a while, this fear of what will happen, mm-hmm. You know, just kind of erupts. And sometimes I think, okay, I'm 68, I'll be 69 soon. Maybe I can get through this, you know, and I'm glad I don't have kids, you know, but just really fearing for our society and the world.
Yeah, yeah, so a lot of fear. Yeah, I experienced that too. And the way I deal with it is, the only way to deal with that is to have a strong mind and to hold compassion. That's the only way. It's like that situation. There's no choice. I can't go to anger. I can't go to rage. You know, because none of those are beneficial in the slightest. So, you know, this is the time to really have a strong mind that can bear things, that doesn't jump to conclusions, that doesn't create worst case scenarios on little evidence, you know, and to be strong and to speak out, you know, which is what I think we really need to do now. You know, if we see hate crimes, if we see violence, if we see prejudice, even, you know, on our streets or among our friends, or also, you know, communicating with the government. You know, it's like we've got to be strong and make our voice known. And remember that Hillary won the popular vote by 2 million people. So it's not everybody in this country. And that there's a lot of people in this country that are alarmed at what's going on. And if we cooperate with each other and make our voices heard, yeah, then maybe we can bring about some transformation. Yeah. And there's no alternative to doing that. There's no alternative. We've got to do that. Okay. So I'd like to close with a dedication of merit. So we created some virtuous karma here, and so to really rejoice at it, and we can imagine it as a light, and sending that light of our own and others' merit out into the universe, and imagine it touching people and softening their minds, lessening their fear, creating harmony in their own minds so they can create harmony in their lives and in the country. Due to this merit, very soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forever.